Hey everyone, and welcome to the Hack My Homestead podcast. This is Sean Mills, and today is Saturday, October 7th, 2023. And today I want to talk to you a little bit about permaculture zones. So what is a zone? What are the zones in permaculture? And how do you use those zones as part of your design thought experiment on your own property? So a lot of people start with zone zero, which is like the house itself, and I don't. I start with one. Most of us will not be able to design our house from scratch with permaculture in mind. That's not to say that we can't take the house that we have and utilize the permaculture principles to figure out how to manage the things in the household. But I just I figured the house is an anchor that zone one surrounds. And I think that's where we should start with the permaculture design. So, I think that a lot of people are going to look at designing their place from scratch and really doing a lot of thought about zone zero and how you manage zone zero. But, I don't put a lot of thought into it for our property. I'm trying to get out of the house and be in nature, so to speak. And so the idea that I'm going to spend a whole lot of time designing what's inside the walls instead of what's outside the walls, for me, is just not really how I utilize permaculture. So I'm going to start with zone one. So zone one is what's right outside your door. The path that you walk every day. So wherever you park your car, the path from your car to your porch or whatever door you use to enter the house most days, that's zone one. The areas that you can get to easily. So if you have, like for us, we have our rainwater catchment cistern around the back of the house. And I regularly go back there and check on other things, but check the water level as well. And so the path from my porch back to, and I normally use the same porch. I go out the same way when I'm going back to check on the water. So, that path would be zone one. The areas that you might plant with things like an herb garden that you're going to use every day would be a zone one. When you think about things like egg chickens, well, we're going to go visit our egg chickens daily to collect eggs and to make sure that their feed and water is good to go. So a lot of people will put small livestock in zone two, and I understand that. But if you've got egg chickens, at a minimum, the path that you walk every day to go visit your chickens is zone one. Okay. These are the things that need the daily visit and active regular management, So like I said, a kitchen garden with herbs. I like thinking about tomatoes because salad tomatoes, it might get picked daily once they become ripe. What I would want to put in zone one, but sauce tomatoes, which get picked, over a short period of time later in the season, I'll probably put those in zone two because those are things that I'm not visiting every day, or at least not going out and managing every day. The other thing I think people should think about from a zone one management standpoint is, hangout areas. And I know not everyone hangs out outside, but I know a lot of us that are in the permaculture mindset, we do spend a lot of time outside. I'd almost rather sit on the porch or around a fire pit and hang out, listen to music, then sit in the living room and watch TV, watch a movie with the family. It's not to say I don't love watching movies and love watching movies with the family, but my preference would be to go out and sit in the fire, sit at the fire pit. So for us, the fire pit is zone one. We actually have a porch on three of the four sides of our house. And while one of those is in somewhat of disrepair, my intention is to manage all three of those porch areas as zone one. So then getting into zone two. Zone two is the areas, that you might still visit daily, but they're a little bit further out from zone one. They're not right outside the door. You might see them from the house, You don't necessarily walk by, past them on your way to the car or the mailbox every day. I think about zone two as these are the areas that I may or may not visit daily, and I make a conscious decision to visit when I do, okay? And so, you know, like I said before, small livestock in these areas. You know, if I've got rabbits and they're set up properly with feed and water, I don't have to go out and see them every day. Now, during bad weather parts of the year, maybe I will. When it's time for rabbits to make more rabbits, maybe I'm out there every day. But, you know, that's not something that requires a daily visit in terms of, you know, how we design our system. Perennial vegetables would fall into this category as well. You know, vegetables that even annual vegetables that you don't harvest all the time. I mentioned before my sauce tomato would be one. You know, things that are late harvest, you know, so cucumber might be a zone one plant, vining plant, but a winter squash might be a zone two plant, right? I might have an area dedicated to growing winter squash, knowing that, you know, that's going to come on late in the year and it's mostly going to be harvested around the same time. And I don't have to go out there every day to make sure that a squash didn't go bad on the vine or get too big for me to pickle like a cucumber might. Berries is another one that's good for zone two. You know, berries are something that they're only gonna, you know, ripen a certain time of year. And so, you know, again, you're making the conscious decision to go out there and hit the berry patch, hit the blackberries or raspberries or whatever it is, when they're becoming ripe. And so, so that's another one that you might put into zone two. Things like your compost bin might go in zone two. If you've got worms or vermicomposting systems, that might be a zone two area. You know, if you've got a tool shed that you regularly access for, you know, pruning shears or snips or whatever for harvesting lettuce or whatever the case may be, you know, you might want to put that into a zone two area. And then you go out to a little further to zone three. And so zone three, so zones one, two, and three are the ones that are actively managed by humans, right? So zone one is the area right outside the door. Zone two is a little bit further out that we might still go daily. And then zone three, these are the areas that we don't necessarily have to go out and visit daily. You're still going to go out there on a pretty regular basis, but not daily. So if I've got beef cattle, for example, that they might be in zone three. Whereas if I have a milk cow is probably going to be in zone two, you know, a little further out than zone one, but I've got to get out there and I've got to milk that cow every day. And so, you know, the milking barn might be in zone two. And then the path from the house to the milking barn is zone one, right? And so other things that you might put here would be staple crops like potatoes, for example, or wheat or corn. If you grow those things, you know that, you know, you plant them and you go out there over the course of maybe 1 week over the course of the year to do all of the harvesting. Sweet potatoes is another one. If you're not eating sweet potato vines and you're just harvesting the actual root crop, you know, that's something that's like one week, they're all going to come out of the ground. They're going to sit there and they're going to dry out on the soil. And then you're going to go pick them up and take them in. So that's something that can be planted a little bit further out. Fruit and nut trees is another good one. You know, if you've got a food forest, you know, your food forest is probably zone three, although maybe where it butts up against zone two is where you have berries and things that, you know, have a little bit of a more spread out harvest time. If you're actively growing mushrooms, like if you're inoculating mushroom logs and you've got an area, you know, maybe that's in zone three. Honeybees, if you keep honeybees, those are typically in zone three. You're not going and managing them every day and you don't want them right up next to the house. But those are good examples of things that kind of live out there in zone three. And again, the first three zones, these are the areas where we're planting things, we are, you know, cultivating, we're we're managing, we're watering, we're actively irrigating these systems. That's what zones 1, 2, and 3 look like. And then when you get out to zone 4, that's where you transition to, you're starting to get into the wild area. You might still harvest it, or you might still manage it some, and mainly that management is going to be through harvesting. So, you might go out and cut wood. You might cut wood for firewood. You might cut wood for poles. You might cut wood for crafts or for woven, fencing and things like that. This is where nature is doing the planting and the management, and really the only management you're involved with is the harvesting. So wild foraging, including wild mushroom forest foraging, hunting, right? Hunting is typically going to happen in zone 3. Although depending on the way your system is set up, you might be able to set up in zone 3 and hunt the fringe of 3-4. That's kind of how we have it set up here, is all of the deer we harvest are at the zone 3-4 fringe. We're not going deep into zone 4 to harvest deer here. And the same thing with squirrels. Squirrels are things that I might harvest in zones 1, 2, and 3, a little bit more aggressively in zone 1, if you catch my meaning. But I'm not going to go out into zone 4 and trounce around, and go squirrel hunting. Deadwood removal will happen in zone 4. So if you've got, dead trees or limbs that have fallen, or even trees that have been blown over because of storms, those are things that you're going to go into zone 4 to remove, right, to kind of keep that area managed a little bit. Whereas in zone 5, you might just let all of those things go. So what's zone 5? Well, zone 5 is like your wilderness, right? It's unmanaged and mostly unvisited areas. Now, we still want to observe and interact with nature. So I think zone 5 is an area that you might still go to a bit and observe. You might even take things like, cuttings to propagate in other areas. If you've got things growing in zone 5 that you want to grow on other parts of your property, then, it would be okay to go out and harvest some cuttings to bring into the other areas. But mostly, in terms of permaculture, zone 5, you don't touch. You leave it alone. You let nature do its thing. Like I said, if a tree gets blown over in zone 5, it becomes a habitat for something else, right? And you just leave it there. And if you're on a smaller property, you might not have a zone 5. If you're in a suburban backyard, you might not have a zone 4, right? You just might have zones 1, 2, and a little bit of 3. If you get onto a little bit bigger property, 2-3 acre property, you might go out to zone 4, but it's unlikely that you've got a zone 5. Now, you might have an area that's just kind of like impossible to get to. It's real steep or something like that, even on a small property. You might just say, well, hey, look, we'll observe what goes on in that area, but we're not going in there. And so that would be, a zone 5 on a smaller property. But like for us, we've got 10 acres. And we've got, 40 acres on one side of us that's owned by a guy that runs goats through the forest. So all of that area is kind of like a 3-4, 3/4. It's 3 when he's got goats rotating through that part of the forest, and 4 the rest of the time. And then on the other side of us, we've got a guy that's got 50 acres, and he really just kind of manages the part up close to around the house. And then he manages a few areas for deer hunting, or he makes sure that he's got some good shooting lanes and stuff like that set up. But he really does not manage. So, he's got 50 acres, and I would say 30 of that's probably zone 5 for him. He just doesn't go there. He walks around the edges of that, you know, to kind of get us a zone four area set up for hunting. And then behind us, we actually have a 500-acre timber reserve. And well, it's not a timber reserve anymore, but it used to be. And so there's a guy that has been actively select cutting that property. And I think I heard recently that he has been leasing that out to hunters. So I've got to find out what's going on with that, if that's still happening. But that's almost exclusively a zone five area behind us. And so on our little 10-acre triangle that, like I said, we're surrounded, we actually have one other property that backs up to us up towards like the top tip of the triangle. But again, that's kind of a zone five area. That area is not managed at all. So we've got a lot of zone five around us. And right now I would say of our 10-acre plot, probably 3 to 4 acres of that is zone five. And it's mostly the areas that back up against the zone fives on our neighboring property. The part that butts up against the goat side is our driveway, and most of what's along the driveway, you know, in the back part is zone 4/zone 3. And then we also have some areas that are obviously around the house, zone 1. And then we've got areas that are kind of designated zone 2, zone 3, but they're in a little bit of a state of flux right now. As a matter of fact, we've got a large zone 2 area that is full of downed trees right now. And so over the next year, as we really kind of put our permaculture plan into place, and I think I mentioned on a previous episode, but like I planned this whole 10-acre property out about a decade ago, and I've just kind of gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I know enough to move forward with the parts that I'm really, really confident in. Unfortunately, for the last 10 years, I hadn't really moved forward with much of anything in terms of that plan part of the reason was because we haven't been here for all of that 10 years, or actually for most of that 10 years. I guess we've kind of, maybe 50-50, but in any case, you know, we spent some time in Indiana, we spent some time in East Tennessee, and we spent some time in Alabama. And then the other side of that was that I was not confident in the overall plan. So I kind of had that whole analysis paralysis thing going on. And I didn't do a lot of work in zone 1 and 2 that should have been done a decade ago. Like I should have 10-year-old trees on this property that are producing right now. And instead, I don't. I have some trees, but I don't have anywhere near the trees that I had designed into the system. And now 10 years later, as I've continued to observe and interact with the property and seen what's going on with the neighbors and everything else, almost all of those areas would be the areas that I would have trees in, right? So, you know, one area that I had thought about setting up is kind of a dedicated goat pasture area with kind of like trees around it. That area is not going to get turned into a goat pasture, but the trees would be perfectly fine if I had planted them a decade ago. So I'm going to continue to move through this permaculture, series to talk about the different things that permaculture teaches us. And we're going to talk about some specific techniques and things like that next week. But, you know, if you're listening to this and you're into permaculture, and you're kind of got, you're like me and you've got that analysis paralysis, I would say get started on zone 1. Zone 1 is zone 1, and you can design the crap out of that until it's perfect. And then you can move out. Now, if your zone 1's perfect or near to it, well, maybe you need to start looking at zone 2 a little bit harder. Or maybe you've got some obvious zone 3 areas that you can kind of focus on. But I would say to get that thing moving. I wish someone had told me a decade ago, look, get those trees in the ground. If they're not in the right place, just cut them down. But if they are in the right place, great. In 10 years, you'll have 10-year-old trees. And even if they're in the wrong place, well, as long as they're not like where the house should be, like coming up through the roof, you can probably still design around them. And oh, by the way, you'll have 10-year-old productive trees. So that's what I'm telling you, listener. All right. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and cut it out for today. A little short one on a Saturday. But I want to thank everyone for joining. And did want to remind folks of a couple things. So next weekend, 7 days from today, I will be at the Self-Reliance Festival. And so I'm looking forward to meeting any of you guys that are going to be there. Just come find me. I'll be the guy with the Hack My Homestead hat and shirt on. I'm not presenting nor do I have a booth on the SRF this time. I did that back in the spring. I'm not going to do it here in the fall. But I'll be around. You'll be able to find me. And if you can't find me, ask Nicole. So Nicole Sauce is one of the people that run Self-Reliance Festival, and she typically will know where I am, or, you know, she knows where to find me most of the time. So when I'm set up at SRF, I'm typically in one of a couple of places, and I should be pretty easy for you to find. I also wanted to remind everyone, I do have the ebook out, What You Need to Know to Evaluate Your Property's Solar Potential. You can find that on the website. I do have another one that's going to be coming out before the end of the year. I'm not going to tell anyone what that is yet, because I actually have two of them that I have in draft, and I'm not sure which one of them I'm going to be able to get to the point where I'm ready to release it before the end of the year. But I have made the 100%, I'm absolutely going to get one of those two published by the end of the year. So I'll let everyone know about that. But the first one is published and available. And I did want to mention that I have some openings in my design schedule in December. So fully booked through October and November. I will be taking off after Christmas to the end of the year. But right now I just have one active design for the month of December. So I've got some availability. If you guys want me to do a design or want to consult with me on an hourly basis for something else that you're working on, just send me an email, Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at hackmyhomestead.com. Also, you can email me if you've got any questions, concerns, or thoughts about the podcast, or if you would like to be added to the monthly newsletter. I was late getting the September newsletter out. I think I got it out before the end of September. I don't even recall. It might have been the 1st of October. I'm giving myself a little bit of time to see if anything changes from a pricing standpoint before I get October out. But it will be out next week. So, again, thanks everyone for joining me, and we'll talk to you next time.